Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 14th of December. A new report has just been released last week by the University of California, San Diego. It's titled, How Much Information? 2009 Report on American Consumers. And it looks at the bytes that we use in terms of information and the average American consumes about 34 gigabytes. I'm not sure what that is, but we'll find out during this hour of data and information every single day. How do we get the information? What kind of information are we using? And the number of hours we spend is just incredible. Our guest is Professor Roger Bohn, Professor of Management and Director of the Global Information Industry Center at the University of California, San Diego. Our phone number for you to join this conversation is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. And our email address, if you'd like to add that to your consumption of gigabytes, is talk@wpr.org. I guess actually all of our conversation would in some way add to the amount that you use during the course of this day. Professor Roger Bohn is joining us from the studios at the University of California, San Diego. Professor Bohn, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning. It's nice to be here.
Why did you decide to look at the gigabytes that we're using? What's the difference between a study of that and a study of hours?
Well, gigabytes is a traditional measure in the computer industry of how much data is being moved around. Hours is, on a human scale, gigabytes is sort of the way computers think about it. And we expected to find that gigabytes were growing as fast for consumption as they are for everything else, which is around 30 or 40% per year. That's not actually what we found.
So you found?
What we found is that the number of gigabytes we consume is only growing about 5% per year, which is extremely slowly by most standards.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, television has been stagnant technologically for the last 20 years or more. High-definition television is starting to come into place, but its penetration is still quite low. And television has, until very recently, been the vast bulk of the gigabytes that people receive. And since television technology has not changed, that means the number of gigabytes has not changed very rapidly. Now, people are receiving, spending more hours watching TV than they used to. They're spending more hours doing all kinds of consumption than previously. So the number of gigabytes has increased slowly, but there are limits on how long the day is. And as a result, the amount we consume as individuals is only increasing very slowly.
Yeah. So the number is going up. What did you expect that it would be before you did this study? Did you think it would be much higher?
Yeah, we expected that it would be going up at 30% per year because that's so-called Moore's Law, and that's how fast almost everything connected with information technology goes. That's how fast your computer speed increases. That's how fast the storage capacity of your hard drive increases. Actually, it's a bit more than that. That's how big computer games get, how fast they've been growing, and on and on. So we were surprised to realize that that's not what's driving the normal human consumption of an average person.
Mm-hmm. If everybody had high-definition TV, would that number be enormous? I thought that number would be much higher than it is, that many of us would have this. If most of us did, would that drive up the number of gigabytes a lot?
It would drive up the number of gigabytes, but it would only go from 34 to about 50 gigabytes per person per day. So not a huge increase. It turns out that nowadays most of the gigabytes are not coming from television. Television is only about 40%. 50% of the gigabytes are coming from computer games, Xbox 360 and PlayStation. Nobody's ever measured computer games before, so that was another big surprise that they were indeed so significant. And if we switched over from conventional TV to high-definition TV, that would cause sort of a one-time bump, which we expect to see in the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all.
And computer games are being then obviously played by everybody.
That's right. It's up to approximately 80% of Americans.
You're kidding me.
No, most of us think, oh, I don't play computer games. But think about solitaire when you first saw Windows. or my wife likes to play Bookworm. Everybody is playing Farmville and the like on the on Facebook, all kinds of social networking games, Tetris. People play on their cell phones when they're at the bus stop or whatever. Everybody plays a little bit of computer gaming at some point.
That extent, well, I've never played a computer game, so I must be in the real minority here. 80% of Americans. Wow.
That's right. So if you've never played solitaire or fiddled around with something on your computer, you are definitely in the minority.
Yeah, I guess I am. I haven't played solitaire, although maybe I should try. What is that game? I don't mean for this hour to be what kinds of games can we play, but is Bookworm somehow more of a thing about books? Or
it's
what?
Like Scrabble.
Oh, really?
Basically, yes. You have a bunch of letters, and you have to assemble the letters into words.
Oh, now that sounds like fun.
It is fun. It's quite gripping. I'm not very good at it. My wife's really good at it.
Yeah. Would you imagine that there's a huge age disparity here, though, that most people have played, but the vast majority are people who are, I don't know, 16 to 40?
Yes. The nature of the play differs. For a while, for example, there was a big gap between men and women. Men played a lot more computer games than women. Nowadays, with these so-called casual games that I've been talking about, women play just as much as men, but they do tend to play different sorts of games. The really intensive, high byte content, high graphics content, race car, flying, shooting type games, those are played by younger men mostly.
Mm-hmm. So that you play those on PlayStation and those kinds of things, or you play those on your computer?
Both. PlayStation, Xbox, Nintendo, the Wii now, as you know, is becoming very popular, and
right.
on the computer. All these platforms. And even now on your iPhone.
If you have one of those. Right?
Yes, well,
it's a whole different world, Professor, isn't it? Oh, my gosh. These things are just proliferating. So the total number of hours per day that would be consuming all of these gigabytes would be how many? Can we translate that? Is it?
Yes. It averages about 11 and a half hours per person per day. And that's gone up from 7.5 hours in 1980. So in a quarter century, it's gone up by 50% from 7.5 to 11.5 hours, basically. So that's a big increase. And that covers television. It covers use of the internet, computer, even listening to the radio. All sorts of things have gone up. Print media have gone down. But that's one of the few things that have gone down. And there are some things that don't even exist anymore, like telegrams and faxes have become relatively minor. We're only looking, by the way, at household consumer use, not business use of information. So if we looked at business, there'd be additional time beyond the 11 and a half hours.
Oh, that's just, I assumed that businesses were included in that, business hours. That covers almost all of your waking hours.
That's exactly right, although there is a certain amount of double counting there. If you're playing on the computer and listening to the radio, the nature of the numbers we use will count it twice. So there are now more than 24 hours in the day. You can be doing two things simultaneously for 12 and a half hours, and you've exceeded the 24-hour limit.
Wow. And I think that young people, my son certainly, I don't know how the heck he does this. He's texting. He's learned to do that, so you don't even have to look at it. Texting, listening to an iPod, and on the computer, three things at the same time.
That's correct, and we would count that three times.
So a lot of us are doing that. We're triple tasking.
Triple tasking. It's not clear that it's a good idea in terms of actually understanding what you're doing.
Exactly. That's my point.
Yes, but people are definitely doing it.
Yeah.
One of the surprising things, by the way, is that for television, I expected to find that young people were the big consumers of TV. It turns out that older people are the biggest consumers of TV.
Because we know how to turn it on.
Well, actually, it's because retired people spend a lot of time in front of television sets. So people over 60 spend more hours watching TV than people under 20.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking about all these forms of communication, all these ways that we're getting the information. And I'm wondering, how many of us really know how to use all of this stuff to get this information? It's almost as though we should all be required to take, if we want to do it, to take some kind of course so we know what's going on.
Well, that's certainly been an interesting social trend. I remember when I first started telling people about the internet, I was in Europe teaching some European executives, and they said, "You Americans have an advantage. You know how to type." So things have really changed since then. That was in the 1990s.
Yeah. What do you think about, and I know this isn't the nature of the study, but what do you think about all of those gigabytes that we're taking in? Has it changed, you know, our brains? Has it changed how we're dealing with each other as human beings? Or are we an extension of machines more, do you think? Is it good? Is it bad?
Well, there are obviously everybody's asking those questions. There are lots of psychologists who are starting to do studies of those things. Definitely the answers are not really in. There is a theory that, for example, people will get better at multitasking if they practice it more. But oddly enough, most of the research shows that people who multitask get worse at juggling things in the sense of they have a harder time picking out what's important from what's unimportant.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yes. So we may be making negative evolution in a sense.
Right. What about just the amount of time that we spend on the internet? And I would assume that's Facebook, is browsing for information. It's whatever you do on the internet.
Yeah. Email, web surfing, getting news. People spend about 2 hours a day on average on the internet and for all kinds of purposes. The nice thing about the internet is it's very customized information. Up until the internet, almost everything we did was broadcast. That is, you could tune into a channel, but the same material was being sent to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's customized. You can go pick out exactly what you're particularly interested in. For example, two-way communication now with email is and with texting and Facebook and so on, we spend a lot more time doing two-way communication than we used to, at least through electronic media.
Do you know how to text?
Yes.
Yeah, I just learned last week.
Yes, and I made my mother learn because texting is actually the best way to communicate in an emergency. It's better than using the cell phone directly.
Why?
Because using the cell phone directly, you'll usually run out of bandwidth. Everybody gets on their cell phone at the same time.
Oh.
I live in California, so we have obvious occasional events. And everybody wants to talk at once. The stations, the antennas get completely overloaded. Nobody can get through, but you can still get through by texting.
Always? I didn't know that. Oh, that's interesting.
Well, always I wouldn't want to try that, but you're much more likely to get through with sending a 10-word text message. I'm fine. The neighbor's house burned down.
Oh,
love
gee.
You. Bye.
Oh, no. Are you cooking dinner, Mom?
Yeah, right.
There's a message you'd want to save forever, and the problem is it's just gone, isn't it? Oh, that's something. Well, I really think there must be an age. It's great that your mom knows how to do that, but it seems as though there must be a huge age divide with some of these things. I mean, I did go on Facebook too recently, and I think I'm proud of the fact that I'm on Facebook, and I love it. I just love Facebook. I mean, be too big a part of my life now because I'm looking at, you know, friends and finding all these friends and wondering what people are thinking. But in some ways, it really is a nice form of communication, isn't it? It's fairly quick and it's nice to know what people are thinking.
It is. It absolutely is. And it's less obtrusive than picking up the telephone. It doesn't have to have both people doing it simultaneously. So you can conduct these kind of delayed conversations
yeah.
over a period of a day or two. It's
right.
great.
Well, that's interesting. I never thought about it that way. You're absolutely right. Now, is there a danger? I'm trying to get a handle still on these gigabyte things. Maybe there's a way you can tell me to put a mental image in my mind. But is there a danger if we've got all this stuff, the TV, the radio, the texting, the games, et cetera, that it's going to get overloaded? Do we have enough room for all of this?
Well, we're already overloaded. I mean, it's very hard to find somebody who says they aren't in information overload, especially when they're at work. And, excuse me, part of the answer is we ignore stuff. We measured how much, essentially, information comes to your eyeballs. We did not measure how much of it passes into your brain.
Mm.
And so when people are multitasking or they have the television on in the background while they're cooking or something like that, they're not necessarily paying attention to it.
Hmm.
And that's probably a good thing. It's not all equally important.
Mm-hmm. I've heard somewhere a study that was done and we do this to promote ourselves, of course, but the information that comes from the radio is much more likely to be retained in the brain, which I find interesting that people can, whatever you hear on the radio, if it's a significant conversation, you're much more likely to remember that. And I'm wondering if there is, do you think, one of these other forms of communication that might be equally as effective in passing information into your brain?
Well, oddly enough, plain old reading is making a comeback. Between email and web surfing and Facebook, we read now more than we did 25 years ago. And I suspect it's pretty effective, although I haven't seen any direct studies on that.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. It might be in shorter little doses, right? But we do read an incredible amount. There's so much there.
Yep, exactly. And reading is still a very efficient way to communicate certain kinds of ideas.
Right.
So our consumption of reading is up to now about 30% of our time, if you include both traditional text sources and also the newer sources. Mm.
Let's welcome phone calls for you. Our guest is joining us from studios at the University of California, San Diego, Professor Roger Bone, Professor of Management, Director of the Global Information Industry Center at the University of California, San Diego. They did a study that was released last week, which I'm sure that, you know, everybody picked it up, so I'm sure you heard about it. Because there are a lot of ways to hear about it as well, right? Somebody texted you or sent you an email or you found it on the news, on the internet, or on television. The study was titled, How Much Information? 2009 Report on American Consumers. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. A couple lines are open. We also have an email address. So there are a couple ways for you to reach us. That is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Rhonda Fanning is doing on-air production today as well, so you'll chat with Rhonda and we'll get you on the air momentarily. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now, starting with Cyrus from Eau Claire. Hi, Cyrus.
Hi.
Hi.
Am I on?
You sure are.
I had a quick question regarding the slow increase, I guess, in youth and what your guest thought about our infrastructure that we have in the U.S. here. Currently, my internet connection is the fastest that I can possibly get, and there's a lot of times that I find it's just not fast enough. And I guess I'll take that off the air.
Wait, and you think it's not fast enough because what does that mean to you?
It's about 20 megabits a second, and you know, if I'm playing a video game, which takes quite a lot of bandwidth, and you know, listening to music and downloading, you know, something off the internet, it's just not adequate for it. Where a lot of countries have you know, different types of internet options that we don't seem to have here in the United States.
Oh, okay.
Just wanted to know what his thoughts were on that with the slow increase, I guess, speed. And all I wanted to add, I got the phone number from my mobile phone.
Okay. Thanks very much
Thank you.
Your call. Professor Bone.
Sure. That's definitely an issue. And there is a phenomenon, of course, the more bandwidth we get, the more we try to do with it, and therefore the more we want. But certainly our bandwidth now, on average, is below some countries. Korea and some Scandinavian countries and so on are notably faster on average. And this is a politically controversial issue. The Federal Communications Commission is holding various kinds of hearings about issues related to that. To me, one of the breakpoints is, will we get bandwidth that's fast enough that people start receiving television programs on the internet instead of off TV? And right now, the system is nowhere close to that. If we all tried to, one or two of us can do that at a time, it takes a while to download the show, may take a few hours, and then we can watch it. But if everybody tried to do that at 7 p.m., almost none of the country would be able to get that kind of bandwidth. Mm-hmm. That is going up as long as people are willing to keep paying for the internet. Bandwidth will keep increasing. Certainly the technology improves. And polls now say that a lot of people say they'd sooner do without their cable TV than without their internet connection. So I think that will continue to improve.
When he was talking about how fast it was, it is interesting. I mean, what the heck are we thinking about? It wasn't that long ago that it took a long time for a letter to get to us. Sometimes you can get through on a telephone. And now we want our information on the computer as fast as possible. If there's a little bit of a delay, and I'm this way too, what the heck? This is a computer. This is supposed to run really fast, and it's slow.
That's right. And in fact, I think people get some kinds of communication too fast. There are studies that say that some people check their email within a minute of an email message arriving. That is the little the computer makes a dinging noise and they immediately stop what they're doing and rush over and see what the latest email message is. And that means that they're getting interrupted every couple of minutes in some cases. There have been studies of computer programmers who you would hope might be sophisticated. On average, they interrupt themselves with another task every 3 minutes.
Isn't that something? Because we want to know what's going on right away.
Apparently.
Huh?
Yes. I try valiantly to keep my internet shut off for several hours a day. I don't always succeed somehow.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah, it has a way of turning itself back on.
Yeah, I'm sure. And so we're doing that even though, as you say, we're having a hard time sorting through what's important. We're doing that, obviously, if a lot of people do that. It's just to see what it is. It may be of absolutely no importance whatsoever.
Well, and some of it, some fraction of it is spam. Fortunately, spam filters have gotten pretty good, so we don't see much of it anymore. 90% of the emails that are sent are spam now.
90% are spam.
It's probably higher. Nobody knows for sure.
Whew. You know, I haven't had a spam, knock on wood. I got to find some wood here. There we go. A spam in a long, long time. I haven't even thought about spam recently.
Well,
so it's the filters that are working, huh?
The filters are working very well, but the innovation continues. We got, my wife started laughing the other day. She was getting a message from the director of the FBI saying, respond immediately or you'll go to jail.
Cyrus, thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Paul from Wausau. Hi, Paul.
I have a question about how much information we receive from non-electronic sources in a day. Is it possible to measure just through our ordinary five senses how many gigabytes of information we process? And then what that 34 gigabytes is that, what fraction of the overall that we experience?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Yeah.
That is an excellent question, and I really would like to be able to answer it. And all I've been able to do is speculate about it. Certainly, we have many hours a day when we're talking to people face-to-face or we're walking around and looking at things. The best estimates are that we are getting far more information per second that way than through any of the electronic media. Our eyes and our ears are better than our computer screen in that sense. And I did do an amusing back-of-the-envelope calculation, which says that our ancestors 200 or 300 years ago may have actually received more information when you count non-electronic forms than we do today. So I think that's definitely an issue. Unfortunately, I couldn't find any objective way to quantify how much information we receive through our five senses in the normal course of events.
So the ancestors, what do you mean in terms of looking at the sky more carefully and animal behavior or what?
Well, I was thinking of the old tradition of sitting around the dinner table, when the sun has set and you have candles to keep things lit, but you're talking to everybody.
Oh.
And face-to-face conversation is very high bandwidth. It's much better than you can get out of any television program or anything like that. So depending on what value you give that, an hour of face-to-face conversation is equivalent to many hours of watching TV. And so if people sat around and talked for a couple of hours every day, they may be receiving more than the 12 hours of electronic information that we get now.
Oh, isn't that interesting? I wonder how many people do that, sit around and have good conversation for two
hours. Well, it's gone now.
It's gone.
At least in my family. Yes. Oh. I mean, when I went and saw my father's grandparents when I was little, they could sit around the table and have an interesting conversation for many hours. I'm from Boston. Think of the Irish-American tradition of gab.
Sure.
And nobody can do that anymore, or very, very few people can do that anymore.
Because they don't know how?
We don't practice it. We all rush off to our individual rooms, turn on our individual TV sets, or nowadays turn on our TV set and load up the internet after supper. And we don't have to entertain ourselves. Somebody else entertains us.
So I guess I was thinking about radio while you were saying that. So what we're engaged in right now is a lost art.
Well, we're keeping it alive. So think of it that way.
Right. Thank you very much, Paul, for your call. We go to Bill from Madison. Hi, Bill.
Hello. A couple of comments. One, I disagree with the guest when he talks about the facts as a lost or obsolete technology. I work in the law and real estate businesses, and whenever you have to send documents that have to be witnessed or signed, fax is the only thing that's legally acceptable, and everybody that I know has a fax machine, and we use it all the time. And yes, it's antiquated and in many ways inefficient, but there's no substitute for it that's any better so far. And so fax machine is still very much alive. The other thing is, it's true that we read a lot more than we used to, but the quality of it has gone way down. Most of what you see on Facebook is utter drivel. Most of what people have to say in Facebook and tweets, Twitter, is just utter nonsense, not worth the time. So, you know, I don't feel any consolation from the fact that we're reading more, because the quality of what we're reading has gone way, way down. I'll take reactions off the air.
Thanks, Bill.
Well, I agree with both points. The fax is still used in certain businesses. We didn't measure business communication, so we didn't include it directly. I would point out, though, that the legal industry is relatively slow to change. It has a lot of traditional ways of doing things, for good reason. But that suggests something. Nowadays, most people, when I work on consulting on legal cases, a lot of times people just scan a document and email it to me rather than faxing it to me, although that may not be as good for proof purposes. As far as the quality of what we're reading, I have to say it's all entertainment. So even the news programs nowadays are pitched more or less as entertainment. And it's a little bit hard to objectively say that the quality has gone down as a social scientist. Subjectively, of course, I'm back with the Romans in 20 BC, and I say the younger generation just isn't what we used to be when we were their age. And the Romans were right, right? The empire collapsed.
Right, exactly. That's not going to happen, though, right? No, we don't know. Mike from Milwaukee, hi.
Hi. Well, you answered quite a bit of what I was thinking. And by the way, I can think much faster than I can speak. And I can speak much faster than I can type. And so in a way, the technology is regressing our communication skill. And it's slowing us all down, not speeding us up. It's okay to get information, but just remember this. This is a two-dimensional thing. The world is at least three dimensions. And by people not socializing, they're not gaining the skills that they need for socialization skill. They're being isolated ahead of television or computers. So that's the downside to this thing as far as I can tell. But my question, I got a question for you. Kindle and Sony have now electronic books. I don't know about you, but when I read a book, I mark it up. I tear pages out, that kind of thing. It helps as a mnemonic to help remember things. What is your take on electronic books?
Well, I don't have one, which tells you something about my take on it. I think the technology is interesting but immature, and you've put your finger on one of the big reasons. Another is it's not in color. Another is it's really less convenient to carry around, and you have to worry about losing it, breaking it, and so on, whereas when I lose a paperback, it's not a big deal. The technology is improving. Everybody else has made the same observation that you do. One of the tests will be when we get electronic textbooks, because those you have to be able to mark up. You have to be able to take selections out of them and so on. In a few ways, though, electronic books are better. When I do my own research now, I do not get paper copies of anything. I get everything in PDF form because I can store it all on my little laptop. And so wherever I am, my office is with me. And if I want to take an excerpt and stick it into my notes, I just copy and paste it. So in that sense, electronic books have gone past conventional books. As far as the comfort of reading in bed and so on, people who have Kindles tell me that they're wonderful. I haven't believed them quite enough to get one for my wife, haha. I think the technology is progressing fast enough that in a couple of years we'll see systems that are much better than what we have today.
Isn't there, though, this may seem like a simple thing, but to some of us it's a big thing, a huge quality in the difference of how you're taking things in. Computers are hard to look at for a long period of time. The screen and books somehow seem easier on the eyes.
That's absolutely correct, actually. And I and most of my colleagues, when we want to read something long, we print it out.
Right.
Not good for the trees, but much better on our eyes.
Mm-hmm. Well, you, of course, use recycled paper.
Yes,
you go through a lot of that still. I understand. Thanks, Mike, for the call. Let's go next to Sally. Hi, Sally. Where are you? Minnesota?
Yeah, I'm calling from beautiful southeastern Minnesota. It's not windy, and it's calm. It's nice and warm and beautiful.
Great.
Yeah, I'm calling to let you guys know that that there are still some holdouts out there, or maybe you'd rather call them dropouts, and that's me. I have no cell, no TV, no internet. I observe and listen to the world basically through radio when I have time. And it seems to me that not only do folks spend an awful lot of time out there in an alternative world, but then you spend an inordinate amount of time talking about it.
Right. And so how is your life, just on a day-to-day, how would you spend? We were talking about the number of hours spent consuming information this way. How would you spend your day?
I'm so blessed. I'm so lucky, and I'm so happy. And I am also very slow. I'm a slow person. I get up in the morning, and I put on my play clothes, and I go out and I take care of my animals, all the critters, have my chores in the morning.
Oh, you live on a farm?
It's not like a real farm. It's more like a hobby farm.
Oh.
I own a greenhouse here by Wayland, Minnesota.
Oh.
And so I spend most of the year from like April Fool's Day to Thanksgiving growing things. I grow plants.
Oh.
That's my living.
Uh-huh.
And the rest of the time I just get ready for it and clean up for the next year and the last year. But yeah, I have it's like a hobby farm.
Right. Oh, it sounds delightful.
It's unbelievable, and it's what's so nice about it is that I can think about things. I go slow, and all my friends, all the people that I know that I am connected to, that are connected, they know that I go slow.
And you connect with them by seeing them, by calling them?
Yeah. Right now I'm snowbound, so they'd have to come to me.
Oh. It sounds very, very captivating, doesn't it, Professor Bowen? Most of us don't live that way.
Yes, and I would like to see all of us take an hour a day where we're just living in our own heads. But I think that is indeed a dying art. I used to go for long bike rides and have lots of time to think. Now I go for long bike rides and I listen to my iPod. It has made the long bike rides easier. It makes it easier for me to get out the door and go for a 30-minute run or whatever. But it does mean that I'm not spending as much time thinking. The only time I have in my own head now is in the shower, practically.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Sally, for your call. And there is something to be said. I would imagine, I don't know what the studies are on this, that people find a need to get away from all of this are on vacations, too, that we go camping. Camping is still a big thing to do. We go to lakes. We go to places that aren't wired.
Well, that's a great idea. Unfortunately, there's at least talk, and I don't know how much it really goes on, of people taking their cell phones with them and checking their BlackBerries when they're on vacation.
Yes, that happens. We must admit that happens.
Okay. Yeah, work has become 24 hours, basically.
Mm-hmm. Carl from Cottage Grove. Hi, Carl.
Hi, I'm actually on the Bell Line, and my comment had to do with what your guest said about how we're reading more. I was just on the internet on NPR.org, and there was an article. Well, actually, it was a 7-minute blurb or so on how children with reading disabilities and autism. They showed anomalies on I believe it was either a CAT scan or an MRI, and what they did is intense reading programs. And it showed after, I believe it was 100 days or 100 hours, I don't recall, they showed these analogies, anomalies, which was a differentiation in the gray matter or as it showed up in the imaging, became more normal as opposed to they could tell there was distinctions in abnormalities in, autism, or reading disabilities or difficulties. Now, your guest made the comment that one of the callers made the comment that a lot of things we're reading now is dribble, and to a point that's true. I mean, there's not much character development and in the literary sense in texting, but I think your guest is on to something when he says that we're reading more, and I'll just take my comment off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Carl. Professor Bone.
Sure. Several interesting things there. As far as the reading and drivel, by the way, when I was a kid, we looked at comic books and our parents hated it. So there was a certain amount of drivel or let's say low-value stuff. Of course, now comic books are treasured and sell for high prices because they've become art, which indeed is valid. Computer games, somewhat the same thing. Reading and autism, that's interesting. My wife is actually in that area of work. And there's what's happened now is that we are beginning to understand the brain in ways that we couldn't do before. And your guest referred to it. There's something called functional MRI, where you can actually watch somebody thinking, which is scary if you think about the long-term consequences. But as a research tool, it's been really, really interesting that we can begin to see brain processes at work visually in a way that we couldn't do before. And we're learning so much more about how people's brains work and how different people work and so on. It's great. I think we're in a new age. More than the genetics and biotech that everybody is talking about, I think this is a big breakthrough.
Here's an email from Robert. I'd like to ask you this, Professor Bone. What, if anything, would bring about a drop in this volume of bandwidth, be it a change in human behavior or a change in the manner that technology delivers information, such as in a more conservative manner?
Wow. Given present trends, it's nothing is going to drop the bandwidth. It's just getting cheaper. And Moore's Law is working in terms of cost of bandwidth is coming down, and people will continue to do it. Of course, if we had some major social disruption, but it would have to be, I'm afraid, so major that worrying about bandwidth would become the least of our preoccupations. I'd be curious to know what scenario Robert had in mind, because I'm having trouble coming up with something. That would make that kind of difference.
More phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655 is the number. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining us this hour from studios at the University of California, San Diego, Professor Roger Bone, Professor of Management, Director of the Global Information Industry Center at the university there. And we're talking about a major study that was released last week. He was one of the researchers here that looked at consumption of gigabytes of data and information by the American consumer. And we're talking about the findings. And it's leading us into all kinds of interesting discussions, too. Peg from Antigo is next. Hi, Peg.
Hi. Given all the benefits of the computer age and electronic age, I should say, one of the things that concerns me for the general population and the younger people coming up is the lack of critical thinking. I know people who think if it's on the internet, it's true, whatever it is. And I saw this when I was still in the school. If it was printed out from a computer, it had to be true, never mind who put the information into the computer. And this has been a concern of mine. And by the way, I walk without an iPod, and my husband bikes without an iPod. we enjoy the scenery and the sounds. So, but that is has been a concern of mine.
Roger.
Certainly the lack of critical thinking, I agree, has been an issue. I wonder, Peg, if you think that's transitory. I mean, people used to say, well, if it's on the internet, it must be true. But there's so much clear misinformation there, so much fraud and so on. I don't find people quite going that far anymore. What about you?
No, I think there's still an element out there of the people who maybe they're gullible. I don't know. But it concerns me, especially with the political atmosphere, even with ads, anything, of course, ads on TV, whatever. But it's that people don't take time to think things through. And even reporters of news, you don't have the in-depth reporting except for NPR and public TV.
I agree with you.
This bothers me a lot.
Yeah, Peg, I have to agree with you there that reporters now, in my experience, Kathleen accepted, of course, don't hold people to their previous statements in the way that they used to. So that you can say one thing one year, for example, deficits don't matter, let's cut taxes, and then 2 years later you can say deficits are terrible, we have to reduce the deficit, and nobody will point out to you, well, 2 years ago when it was convenient, you said something exactly the opposite. Why have you changed your opinion? One of the other things that has been reasonably well documented is that people now receive the news that they want to receive. That is, they tune into news stations and they read things on the internet from sources that already agree with them. And that, of course, is bad for enhancing critical thinking and for getting exposure to lots of other ideas. So, I am certainly troubled by that also.
Well, it is interesting that you hear, and maybe this is just political parties doing this, or people who are very well organized in their use of texting and emails, et cetera, and being on certain lists, that you hear people repeat the same thing over and over. So it's the it's like talking points for just about everything. And we hear them on this program even, people saying the same thing that somebody fed and then it was just duplicated. We've got this huge possibility of knowledge on the internet, and sometimes it gets narrowed down to something that's not true, that's widely disseminated.
Yes, well, one thing that's happened in, and this is a side interest of mine, is that marketing techniques from consumer industries have been applied to politics in the last few years. Marketers, ad people, as they used to be called, are very good at persuading us to do things that are not necessarily in our best interest, changing our views of the world, changing our emotional states. And I think what's happened is political consultants have taken that whole technology and applied it to political campaigns.
Right.
So we're being manipulated in the same way.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Peg. Pam from Madison. Hi.
Hey, Kathleen. Hey, Professor Bowen. Good morning. Thanks for the conversation. In my own research, which is in the human experience of consumption, which I happen to do for companies and have done it on five continents over the last 20 years, what I've come to see is that we used to be nurtured for internal flow, where we used to be able to go inside to find things to think about or take in information or feelings through our senses. And now that's been substituted by external flow, which happens to come through technology. And kids haven't been raised for internal flow. So really the stuff that comes through technology isn't information, it's stimulation. And when that stimulation stops, there's an emptiness inside, and hence the concern for speed and bandwidth, that when that bandwidth lags, there's an uncomfortable sense of emptiness, which even creates anger, and therefore it has to speed up, which is also consistent with the inability to think critically and the different ways of processing that come through different media like radio. But those are all situational. You listen to the radio when you feel like processing and your imagination is engaged, and therefore you imprint more deeply. But you have to have the capacity for that, and we're not raising kids to have that capacity.
Oh, those are interesting thoughts. Professor Bone?
Well, Pam, that's very interesting. I'll look more into this kind of research, and it certainly sounds all too likely, but have you found any solution?
Actually, I've been going around the world, what I've been tracking is kinds of parenting. And in cultures where I still see internal flow, happens to be most in China and India, where there are long-standing cultures of developing individuals. And even where those cultures are changing, I've been getting to know parents who are fighting to keep their kids connected to that internal self. But it's a completely different process of raising children.
With small children, my wife has commented on playing. Children used to be able to construct stories and play with objects quite easily, and now they're so used to being put in front of a DVD or the television where the story is being built for them. Their imaginations seemingly are not getting developed in the same way that they used to be. I guess I have two conflicting thoughts. One of them is that, yes, indeed, just because technology is new and superior from a technical point of view doesn't mean in any sense that it's necessarily good for us. On the other hand, we have been decrying the end of Western civilization for a long time, and perhaps we will find a solution to this will evolve. It is certainly ironic that you talk about development of the individual with respect to China, which has been viewed as a very collectivist society. So I'm wondering, what does it mean to say internal flow and external flow?
Well, what I've come to find is that internal flow is the ability to stay inside of yourself and process it in your own head. I've started to develop the concept of the Zen of I, the iPod and the iPhone, where in the iPod you're actually banking emotions in your playlist. So that when you need to plug into your own feelings, you do that. It's also interesting you should mention play, because I was in Taiwan last week and talking with one parent about their daughter's kindergarten, which is entirely about where they learn to, they're not doing numbers, they're not doing counting, they're not doing the alphabet, they're singing, they're dancing, they're storytelling, they're cooking, which is completely, I keep laughing about how un-American it is. But they're developing kids in a completely different way.
I'm sure they are. Thank you, Pam, very much for your call. Be in touch with us with your research on that. It sounds fascinating. An email, I travel often for work and I'm away from my family in the evenings. I use Skype to have a meal with my family daily. Even when I'm gone, my husband puts his laptop on our kitchen table. I'm at my hotel room and connected with them in a real way that has immense value. This is from Julian Appleton. We noticed my 13-year-old daughter never uses her cell phone other than to call an adult. Her only communication with her peer group is texting. I second that. The age group also is no longer in communication via email. What do you think about all this?
Well, Skype, I really like that Skype story. That has been a very nice thing for a lot of families that are disconnected. Skype, obviously, is only one of many sources, but the ability to share a meal when you're on a different continent is I think, a very impressive achievement of this technology. As far as the texting point by teenagers, there's definitely a generational gap. I don't understand it, and my students don't seem to be able to explain it to me. there are these stories of people sitting around the table in a restaurant, and they're all texting, and sometimes they're texting to each other.
The person next to them, I know. I don't get it either. We need to
do a show with cultures evolve, and yeah.
Right.
What can we do?
We should have a show with teenagers about how they're using all this. Well,
that would be very interesting.
Wouldn't that be interesting? Well, you sure were interesting. Thank you so much for being with us. It was a great hour. A lot of interest.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Our guest, Professor Roger Bone, Professor of Management, Director of the Global Information Industry Center at the University of California, San Diego. And the study was released last week. Let me get the specific title here. How Much Information? 2009 Report on American Consumers, which was just released. Thanks for all your calls, everybody. You were good as well. But that's always true. Thank you, Rhonda Fanning, who just walked in the door, for producing the program. And thank you, Rhonda Fanning, who's turning the corner for on-air production here as well. We'll be with you again tomorrow, same time, from 9 to 11. Thanks for listening. News ahead and lots more great conversation here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.